You know, a lot of us enjoy video games like the game Zelda, the theme music we're listening to right now. But what happens when they become something else entirely, an addiction that gobbles up time, money, and so much attention that lots of other things fall by the wayside? Dr. Wes Crenshaw has been thinking about this, and he's here to talk about how this massive industry has affected some of us in ways that aren't entirely so healthy. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is a board certified in couples and family psychology, a sex therapist, and author. He specializes in working with teens and families from his offices in Lawrence. And Dr. Wes, always good to have you here. Welcome back.
Nice to be here, Steve.
Ryan Sipes is an entrepreneur and co-founder of the artificial intelligence company Mycroft AI that is currently at the Sprint Accelerator. He's a gamer and technology enthusiast. And Ryan, nice to have you too. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Steve.
Wes, it's hard for me to believe that Atari released the game Pong, which you and I might remember, 43 years ago.
Yeah, I was 10, and I, ping, pong, I can still remember it.
It was a big deal.
Yeah, things have changed over the years.
The crack research team here at UpToDate has found that the industry is valued at $90 billion. That's a lot of money.
It's an amazing amount of money, and you can see that that market reflects the passion and interest of many millions of people.
How is the video, why is it gaming so enticing, Wes? What's going on there that makes this addictive for some people?
You know, and I am not the expert on the game as much as the expert on the person playing it. But some things I do know, and I remember even from my own enjoyment of those games
we
in the past, is they are unusually good at, and their whole point is to grab your attention and to involve you deeply in the process of play. And so it hits the parts of your brain that are the pleasure-seeking parts, just like so many other things do, golf or, you know, looking at certain images or a good friend or whatever. That is just like the most concentrated version of that that goes into games, and that's why it's so enticing and pulls people in.
You know, the term addiction, Wes, gets thrown a lot around a lot. When does video game use go from being an activity to a hobby all the way to an addiction?
Yeah, it is true. We overuse that, and a lot of times that word, at least clinically, I run into it, is thrown around like a weapon. Like, you know, you're just addicted to football. Why don't you ever do something with me, says the partner in a couple. In my case, that would be me yelling at my wife, but she is addicted to football. But that word gets used, and it isn't just in the eye of the beholder, and it isn't just a sort of a off-the-cuff remark. Addiction, as we define it in the business, in this case a behavioral addiction, has two components, and that is that you cannot stop doing the behavior, or it's extremely difficult for you to limit it, and it has negative consequences in your life, whether you realize it or not. And sometimes those consequences are obvious, and sometimes they occur over time. Back in the day of World of Warcraft, I think you were like 3 or something, Ryan, but not quite that far back. But back in the day of World of Warcraft, I seriously, when it was at its zenith, saw numerous marriages fail, numerous people lose their jobs or quit, actually move to be closer to people they played the game with, and just did all sorts of things that ultimately had very negative consequences in their lives. That's just one example.
That's just incredible to me that a game can have consequences that dramatic.
That one in particular was so well designed in the sense that it really played on a lot of the things we like about being people, working together as a group, problem solving, you know, goal attainment, and it was ever changing and always drawing you into a higher level of achievement, and it just became, I used to call it video crack when it was out, because it was like this highly refined version of this game. And it was super fun and I think challenging for people, did, you know, let them really work their mind and all sorts of stuff. But again, it was so pleasing. It drew them away from that which needed to be done.
And if our listeners want to get in here and talk about this issue, maybe they've been addicted or known someone who has been addicted to a video game in one shape or form or another, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR UpToDate. So is there something that happens in the brain chemically Wes, that begins to turn a pleasure-seeking habit, a pleasurable habit, into something that's outright addictive?
Well, it's sort of the same. Yes, but then it's the same thing that's pleasing is that which then becomes addictive. You become drawn to the thing that gives you this sense of pleasure, the pleasure center in your brain. And so chemically, it's different if it's, say, cocaine or something. But it's still the same idea. It stimulates your brain in a way that then you want to replicate that. You want to do more of it. And, you know, why would one, if you were just going for the, you know, what's pleasing, why would someone stop doing something they love?
Mm-hmm.
And yet we realize that life, I'm sorry to say this, listeners will be astonished to hear that life is not simply about seeking pleasure.
Yeah.
There are a couple other things we have to do too.
Well, again, if parents out there have struggled with this issue with their own kids, how do they deal with it? How do they manage it? How do they attempt to deal with it, maybe is the better way to put it. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Ryan, hop in here. What makes video games so uniquely engaging from your standpoint?
So the idea behind a video game is, and I think what makes it so enticing to anybody who plays one of these games, is that there's this sense of micro achievement. And I've talked about this before. It's this idea that you get an app on your phone, and let's say it's like Bejeweled, and you're sitting there and you move the jewels around, you get just the right, you know, order, and boom, you know, something happens on screen, you know, your points go up. That's a micro achievement. Yeah, I think I can't speak to the brain chemistry side of this, but I think that is positive reinforcement in your head. Like, wow, I did a good thing. I want to do that again and again and mm-hmm. again.
And if you're looking at a scan of the brain, when that happens, it will light up.
Yeah.
The scan will.
And I think that...
Is that right?
Sure. Absolutely.
It lights up because why?
Because of that what Ryan is describing is that pleasurable experience, that it excites that part of the brain, and you can see those things on brain scans. It's true with anything. That's not just video games. But I'm just saying it's apparent that the brain is, for that moment, changed by that experience.
What I'd like to add on to, you guys were talking about a complex game like World of Warcraft. You know, this is a massive multiplayer online RPG where there's lots and lots and lots of different activities to get engaged with, and you're with other people. You know, oftentimes when they're called MMOs for short, when they started getting popular, you would hear parents talking to their children, and they would say, you're playing too much of this game, but it's okay, Mom. I'm playing it with other people.
Right.
I'm not alone.
All the time.
Yeah.
My son has uttered this about, you know, going to the library and they play as a group. And it is a social activity.
Yeah.
Well, this will sound weird. Is this the sort of the same idea that I sort of partake in my own backyard this weekend, where I could rake the whole yard and it takes a long time and it's a lot of work to fill up one trash barrel of yard waste? Or there's this one part of my yard where the leaves blow up against the fence, and I can fill up a whole barrel with like four or five strokes of the rake, and that makes me feel pretty good. So I tend to sort of focus on that part of the yard.
Yes, Ryan is, he and I have bantered this around over the last couple of years, and I think he and I separately came to such an agreement, and then together have really reinforced it. This idea of the micro achievements, which I give him credit for the language on that. When you and I were younger, one needed a pile of leaves in order to feel they had achieved something.
Mm-hmm.
Or in my case, I built an addition on my house, or I overhauled the engine in a couple of vehicles. And oh, when you hit the switch and it just starts the first time.
Right.
This is amazing. You know, you've meticulously rebuilt this engine, and to hear it run and to see the oil pressure is, in fact, not zero. That's always important. It's amazing. It makes you feel so good. For gamers, and I'm not judging here, but for gamers, you do not have to overhaul the engine. You do not have to rake the leaves. You do not have to build a 1,400-square-foot addition on your house with a hammer. You do not have to build a business. You can get the same part of your brain firing by flipping the switch on this machine and grabbing the controller and engaging with others or yourself in this achievement. And there are many of them. It isn't just like I got to look at the house once and it's done. or the engine started and now I can drive it around. You get these all the time mm-hmm. in these games. Which is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think that it's oftentimes hard for people to understand what the mindset is that goes into this. You know, I'm an entrepreneur and it takes a lot to get off the ground and get going, and none of those achievements come like in an instant. You know, these are long-term goals that you have to continually, sustainably hit right. to move forward. But at the same time, when you talk about, you know, working on a car and getting it done, part of that is afterwards your peers who might be interested in that vehicle, you can share that with them. You can say, like, look at what I did. I got this running or whatever. There's, with the way that gaming is now, it's become such a social experience that a lot of them are sharing that, you know, with their peers as well and saying, hey, look what I did. I spent a lot of time on this mm-hmm. and look at how I've progressed. But there is there's this negative side of, if you understand the science behind it, there's a lot of good things you can grok from micro achievements. There's a lot of good things that can come of that. Recently, to kind of get my employees finishing tasks, we started using an app that gamifies tasks. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we put tasks on their board, they hit it, and they get rewards, and they get, like, status, they get achievements, right. and they get to share that. Like, you know, you start to eventually say, like, hey, you know, what's up, Bob? Like, I'm way ahead of you, you know? What are you doing over there? And and so by manipulating that, yeah, by manipulating that, by gamifying it, the problem is this conversation sometimes results in us demonizing video games or demonizing this idea of micro achievements. But there are a lot of lessons we can learn from why video games are so engaging and why they're so addictive.
To what extent do you take advantage of this micro-achievement idea, Ryan, in the artificial intelligence work you do at Mycroft AI? I mean, and what is Mycroft AI? What are you doing exactly?
Oh, yeah. This is mighty interesting.
Yeah.
So we're building an open source artificial intelligence for your home. And so imagine the Star Wars computer. You walk into your home, you immediately begin talking to it. You tell it to turn on the lights, turn on the television, you know, whatever it is. We've been working on that for about a year now. And recently we got into Techstars, so into the Sprint Accelerator here in town.
Mm-hmm.
And what I use, it's kind of interesting because artificial intelligence, a lot of it comes down to training neural networks. And so you emulate like a neural network that would exist in someone's brain in a computer, and then you teach it to do specific tasks through a form of reward, you know. And so oftentimes if the program operates in the way that you want it to, you give it positive feedback,
mm-hmm.
and vice versa. So I don't really think about that often, but there's a lot of the same concepts yes. we're talking about now that exist there.
So you weren't developing video games at Mycroft?
No.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, have you ever been addicted to a game yourself or gotten too dangerously close?
Well, I think a lot of teenage boys my age would probably say that they've been addicted to a few video games.
And they say it without even any sort of dishonor or embarrassment. They sort of, oh, yeah, I was addicted to that. I've heard them talk.
Yeah, well, you know it's like Wes was talking about, when you're hanging out with your peer group and you're playing a game, it's not as, you don't really see it at the time, certainly, as like, oh, I'm addicted to this game and I'm spending all my time. It's like, oh, I'm hanging out, I'm conversing with my friends, I'm doing something enjoyable,
right?
You know, but the thing that kept coming back to me is, and maybe this is just because I kind of have rocket fuel in my blood sometimes, but like I would get done playing and I'd be like, man, I still have so much stuff to do. Like, I need to get out there and do this other stuff. And so eventually I had to have conversation with my wife and be like, if you see me playing games over like an hour, you need to kick my butt and tell me to go do something else for a while.
Yeah. Let me go to some phone calls at 816-235-2888 as we talk here about video games, video game addictions. And by all means, if you're a parent who's dealt with this and can help some other parents out here with some advice about how you dealt with this, we'd be interested in hearing from you. 816-235-2888. Aaron from Mission. Aaron, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. Thanks for calling, Aaron.
Absolutely.
Go ahead. Tell us about your experience. You used to play Second Life?
I did.
What is Second Life?
For about a year. Second Life is basically like a virtual reality kind of thing where it's exactly what it sounds, Second Life. People, real life users, it's not companies, but they're making virtual Sims. You create your avatars. It's kind of like The Sims, but real life. It's like a virtual chat room. But people have created like role-playing, like Dungeons and Dragons kinds of things, and things like that.
Yeah, it's more than a game. It's a sort of an online existence, and all manner of things go on. I haven't actually kept up with it. Is it still operating?
Oh, absolutely. It's growing, and with Oculus Rift, it's going to be even bigger once that becomes mainstream.
Hey, have you yourself gotten hooked on it, Aaron?
Yes. I don't play anymore, but for about a year I was doing a lot of role-playing, and so I'd say about 12 hours a day.
Wow.
Yikes.
Yeah. And so it was kind of like writing a collaborative novel with other people. So it was like improvising a novel.
That's a really good metaphor. I get what you mean.
And what was so appealing to you about it that you'd want to spend 12 hours a day doing this?
Well, I think people come for different reasons. I think that I had a lot of social anxiety, and that's why I was on there. But a lot of people, they're stay-at-home moms, or maybe they're bedridden, things like that. But also just people like to explore. Like, I mean, they built Versailles to scale, and you can just go explore. So people from all over the world.
Aaron, hang on just for a second, because when you mentioned social anxiety, Dr. West sort of lit up here and said, pointed at me, I get the impression that's a factor in all of this for a lot of people, Wes.
Well, I'll put it this way. One of the things that I think is great about any online network, we talked about it a little in the last show, that particularly younger kids really, in opposition to, I think, what we think as adults, feel and probably are safer online than they are in their schools. They make connections with like-minded people, and the caller is illustrating that at the adult level. And so I think particularly for people who have some social anxieties, who may be shy, these are at the very least good steps toward broader social skills, and sometimes they are sufficient in and of themselves. And so I think, you know, that one mustn't underestimate that. When you can take on a role, for example, it's like putting on either literally or figuratively a costume. And as many theater folks will tell you, when they put on that costume and get on stage, they're this, you know, totally new character. And then they go home and they're their shy, quiet self. This is similar to the online world, where you can be this character and not have to be as shy or introverted as you are in IRL.
Ryan Sipes, hop in here.
So one thing that I thought about when you said that, Wes, was there's another side to this too. So as a nerdy kid raised in rural Missouri, 100 people in my school, K through 12.
Wow.
Oftentimes, if you the people you were there with were your peer group, and if you had interests outside of what was normal, you might feel like the internet or an online game or something was a chance to connect with like-minded people with like interests. And so it's not necessarily a bad thing, you know, if someone does feel isolated, probably to get online and talk with people who share their interests. Comes back to this thing about the difference is how much time are you spending?
You know, Aaron, I was wondering, after you were spending 12 hours a day at times playing Second Life, at what point, how did you extract yourself from it?
I was able to process a lot of my anxiety and things while I was playing, and then they call it IRL or First Life, and that really just kind of took over. And not playing anymore, and I've got a bunch of things going on in my life, and it's just, you know, I think some people need it at some point.
That's an example of the steps I was saying that people can take to be more operational in their real life by using online. And I think, you know, for kids and adults too, loneliness is really a serious problem. Mm-hmm. It isn't, you know, just go play with your friends. Loneliness for middle schoolers and high schoolers can be very serious. And I've come to realize in talking with them that this has helped for many solve that problem in at least one form.
Well, Aaron, I'm sure glad you called, because after you did, the whole board lit up and you broke the ice, and I sure appreciate it, Aaron.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let me go to Michelle from Independence. Michelle, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
I'm a pediatrician in eastern Jackson County, Independence Blue Springs. And we talk to our patients a lot about this, but I had a child who was really over, he was 15, very overweight. And I tried to gently talk to him about it. I said, really, for your health, blah, 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 you're supposed to get your weight down.
Yeah.
And so the next year he came for his physical, and he lost 40 pounds. And I said, that was remarkable. And I said, well, wow, why did you do that? Or why did you do that? And he said, because you told me to. Well, I mean, that's a great victory for a doctor, you know?
Yeah. Way to go. Then, I'm coming to you.
So. Yeah. I said, well, how did you do it? He said, I quit playing so many video games. Yeah. I was really stunned by that. I said, well, how many hours a day were you playing? 10 hours a day. And I said, well, where were your parents during this? Because I knew the family was really nice and did things together and everything. And he said, oh, they were playing video games too. I said, well, what are they doing now? He said, we've all stopped playing.
Wow. And the corollary, Michelle, between video games and gaining weight would be, maybe it's obvious, but what is it?
Well, just the sedentariness. You're not up moving around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're sitting. Oh, sedentary. I mean, for hours and hours.
Yeah. Ryan? Yeah.
I would love to pose an idea to you, just because earlier I was talking about this habit-forming gaming app on the phone that I use with my team over at Mycroft. And one thing that it's allowed some of us to do is we started putting workout as one of the tasks on there.
Yeah.
And as a result, you know, you can imagine an artificial intelligence company, we spend a lot of time working in our chairs. It took that part of our brain, you know, that we like to get this instant feedback. As soon as we work out, we tap that, you know, we're done. We get the rewards associated with that. We get something telling us, good job. And I wonder, you know, maybe if doctors should be considering, like, especially with folks like that fellow who came in. Fortunately, he was able to turn things around. But
right.
Maybe this is a way to kind of take that energy and take that passion and redirect it towards some other way to still get that good feeling of micro achievements, but also get things done outside of, you know, the video game.
What do you think, Michelle?
Yeah, that would be great. Or you could have the, you know, while you're doing the video games, you're running on a pad or something like that. But
yeah.
My grandson, I have three grandsons, so I'm very, four actually. And they're of the age where they, what concerns me is how they're in every sport and they're very active and very fit and everything like that. They're little guys, like 11 and under, but they are that's what they really want to do the most. I mean, they just can't wait to get their iPad out and play the games. It's scary to see them so compelled at such a young age to just, that's their favorite thing.
So I got a couple of things to say on that. It's such a good call, and I thank you. That first of all, there was an interesting episode of Shark Tank, which I never miss. And
speaking
I'm
of
addicted
addiction.
To it. And they did not, I don't think they funded this, but there was a video game system that in order to play, it was a virtual reality system, and you were running on this treadmill, and it allowed you to move around and do all this kind of stuff. I thought that was the coolest thing ever. That made me want to exercise. With virtual reality improving and becoming more common,
I want to talk about that in our second
half. It's
going
to be a big old deal, and I think that there might be an opening for us to really get young people engaged in sort of like on Star Trek, the holodeck, where you're really actually moving around. We or whatever it's called have moved in that direction, but this would be the next step up, and I think that might be a possibility for the future.
Michelle, I'm sure glad you called. That was a great story. Thanks very much. Yeah, bye-bye. Let's go to Daryl from Kansas City, Missouri. Daryl, we're talking about video games and addiction, and Lisa Rodriguez, our producer today, says that you were addicted for a number of years. Good morning.
Oh, I don't know exactly what it was, whether I would say I was addicted, but I would spend hours when I was 10, 12, 13, 14 at the grocery store playing the video games. And so I was just saying that this isn't technology or feedback that they've had for just over the last couple of years. This feedback is available for them for years and years and years, or 30 or 40 years, if they've been able to gather this information and know what's going to addict these teenagers and to make them stay on these games for longer and longer periods of time.
Hmm. Yeah, Ryan?
Yeah, I'd like to broaden the conversation a little bit. It's very interesting to take a new medium and say, it's very popular to take a new medium and say, you know, this is different. This is an addiction at a different level. This is, you know, bad. But people get addicted to things all the time. People get addicted to a lot of different mediums that aren't just video games. Mm-hmm. People get addicted to watching movies. They just go home and they just watch the TV,
yes,
you know,
that's right.
all night.
That's
or
right.
they can get addicted to reading, which, you know, a lot of people might say positive, but it's not positive if it gets in the way of, you know, completing things that you need to do in order to survive.
I think that kind of goes back to the human aspect of us, that we're obsessive compulsive in nature, just from the beings that we are. I mean, deer will go the same path to pick something up every day until something interrupts it. And I think as human beings, that's what we do. We can become addicted to almost anything, is what you're saying.
That's an interesting comment, Daryl. Wes, are we naturally obsessive compulsive? Is there a component of our beings that we're made up of that idea?
It's an interesting point. Everybody is going to go toward the thing that is pleasing for them. And what makes us different from other animals is that we have bigger frontal lobes and bigger brains, and we can choose whether we're going to pursue mm-hmm. the instinctual thing we like, the pleasure that we like. And so that's kind of critically important. Now, I would use fantasy sports as an example of something that's just sucking the life out of the productivity in the workplace. There's research on this.
Or gambling is a next-door neighbor to that idea.
Gambling has probably been the best analog for many years to the video game trend, because mm-hmm. you were sitting there highly charged waiting for this great response. And what's funny about gambling is you almost never get it.
Mm-hmm.
You get it just enough that it pleases you a little. With video games, you're getting it consistently. So I agree with Ryan. There are plenty of behavioral addictions out there, golf, football, you name it. But video games, particularly for kids, you know, we don't have a lot of kids going out playing fantasy football or playing golf obsessively. But when they get into the video game realm, that can attach to them in a way that other things don't. And parents do have to be concerned about that.